Welcome into your Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis, and I'm joined by Ray Kuhn. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing good. We get to talk about the world champion Astros today, so can't go wrong with that.
Wait, I must be on the wrong podcast. I thought we were talking about your favorite team, the Mets. They must have put me on the wrong show again.
It's the Astros, man. 2017 champs.
Yeah,
a lot to talk about.
Like 6 years ago, if someone had said that, would you have believed them?
6 years ago, there's no way. 2014, when that Sports Illustrated came out, I had the hope. I still didn't believe it. Still did not believe it. I mean, I saw it coming. I saw the process. Now I trust the prospect retroactively, obviously. But yeah, no, would not have expected it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I like all of the players. They're a likable team. They're a small market team. It's nice to see them. I was disappointed when they went from the NL to the AL. I was like, you know what? This team sucks, but they have so much talent here. That was when Altuve was becoming a really good player. I was like, they got Springer. I was really happy for the type of players or the type of team that it could potentially be. Now, I mean, you go out and you signed Reddick, and he's done well. You signed Gurriel, he's done well. You know, you bring in McCann, you bring in Gattis, those players have done well. Correa turned out to be a good player. Gonzalez turned out to have a great season last year. I mean, Altuve's become an MVP candidate consistently every year. Bregman's panned out. Springer has been phenomenal. So this lineup is great. The rotation's got better with the recent trades that they've made and the signing of Charlie Morton. So I think that you guys are in great shape to, you know, be back there this year, even with what the Yankees have done.
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, the Astros, obviously, you had a Gerrit Cole, you had two arms in the bullpen, you have a healthy Springer all year, a healthy Correa all year. These guys are still young. They're still getting better. Bregman struggled first half of last year. He's going to be better. So, I mean, there's still some – obviously, they called a lot of the top prospects up, but the system isn't barren. They're proving that they're going to go out and spend the money and bring more talent in, so – there's no reason to expect this not to continue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It's great. You know, I'm glad to be able to see what this team is able to do, and I'm looking forward to seeing them in October and watching great baseball. So why don't we jump right in? But first, tell our listeners where you can be reached.
I am over on Twitter at @Ray_Kuhn_28. And what about you, Ben?
I can be reached at @BBrennisFWFB. Why don't we start from left to right in the outfield? Right now it has Marwin Gonzalez pegged as the everyday left fielder. What are your thoughts on Marwin?
Personally, I think Derek Fisher is going to end up getting that playing time, or at least that's going to be the intention. I do like Marwin. Last year, he led the team in RBIs last year. The guy literally can play anywhere. He kind of settled into that everyday left fielder role. I think this season the intention is going to be for him to be more of that utility player to move around, and they're going to be concentrating on keeping everybody healthy, everybody rested. So I think we'll see him moving around the infield. Maybe he'll get some DH. Maybe he'll get some time in left field. But Fisher, they drafted him in the second round a few years ago. He really didn't do much last year, only 166 plate appearances, and he hit .212. But he has some power, he has some speed, so you have to let that combination. There's obviously going to be no pressure on Fisher with the lineup that he's going to be in, and the fact that they're so good, he's going to be surrounded by proven studs, proven run producers. So I think he's going to be somebody to watch, just because osmosis, he's going to get some runs and RBIs in there, but it's still going to take him a little bit of time, and I think they're going to give him that time as long as everybody else is winning and hitting. And as far as Marwin goes, I'm not sure we're going to see Marwin hit 23 home runs again next year. I think he's going to be more in that 15 to 18 range. And the thing for me is obviously the position eligibility, shortstop, outfield, first base, second base is great, especially in daily leagues, especially with the new DL rules, everybody and their mother's going on the DL, so that you can't understate that. But at the same time, you don't want to overdraft him expecting a repeat of 2017 either.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for him to be able to put up a repeat like that and for people to gain a ton of value. Obviously, last year he was a player that was barely drafted in a majority of the leagues, and he put up fantastic value. I mean, the fact that he was able to hit over 300 with 20-plus home runs and 90 RBIs while chipping in 8 steals is fantastic. You get someone who can play basically every position other than catcher. So you're, I mean, I guess in a specific league that plays specific positions, then the only downside is that he wasn't eligible in center and right field. But, you know, how many leagues are there really like those, you know? Outside of that, I still think that he's going to be able to give good value to someone this year if he does fall, if enough people in the draft room think that he's not going to be able to replicate the same value as last year. So as we get closer to the start of the season and some outfielders start to sign and trades are completed and everything, you may see Marwin fall a little bit in draft boards just because people may get worried they may not be able to repeat, which would be better for fantasy owners.
Exactly, I agree.
What are your thoughts on George Springer this year? Is he going to be a great leadoff candidate who can still hit for a ton of pop, get a lot of runs, but basically has no stolen base potential anymore? Because yeah, he really hasn't run.
No, he has, and he stole 5 bases last year. The guy has speed, but they've obviously chosen not to deploy it. I mean, there's not necessarily a reason to take those unnecessary chances with Springer running when you have all these guys, all that pop behind them with Bregman, Altuve, Correa. So I get it. You want to try to keep Springer as healthy as possible. But, I mean, last year he hit 34 homers. He did battle some injuries. I mean, he played through them, but he wasn't 100% healthy. He wasn't 100% healthy, especially in the second half. And we did see his power drop. For me, the big thing is contact rate last year went from 72% to 80%. So I think that it means more to me because, I mean, we know he has the tools. It's a matter of him kind of putting the nice pretty bow on it. And I think with that improvement in the contact rate, he was doing that. And, I mean, there's no reason he's not going to get over 100 runs again this year.
Yeah. At this point, I think that he's going to be able to easily clear 100, you know, 30 home runs should be pretty easy, and even 80-plus RBIs is still good. It'd be nice to see him keep creeping up closer to a 300 average, but I'd settle for a 280, and I'd be happy with that. I think he's someone who's going to be a great outfielder and a great value for players this year. It just would be nice if he could chip into those double-digit steals, but when you have players like Correa, Bregman, and Altuve behind you, there's not as much reason to run. Altuve runs because he's one of the best in business at it, and he chooses when he wants to run. You don't tell Altuve when to run, basically. So
exactly.
What about the right fielder? And that's Josh Reddick. What are your thoughts on him? Is he a solid fourth outfielder / third outfielder for you in deeper leagues?
Yeah, probably more to the fourth for me just because you're not getting the home runs. He only hit 13 last year. He drove in 82 runs, so he does produce runs. The 314 average is an asset. So I mean, again, if you're not getting the power to the extent of he's not hitting the 30 home runs, he's hitting 314, so that's an asset. So it can kind of check another box if you pair him up with somebody like a Jay Bruce who hits 260, but's going to hit 30 to 35 homers as your third, fourth outfielder. If you pair the two of them together, I think you're in a good situation. And Reddick, I mean, there's no reason to expect not to expect what we saw from him last year. 85% contact rate and 24% line drive rate are the two things for me that stand out. And, I mean, if he's batting fifth again, with all those guys on base in front of him, I mean, I know I already said it a few times, but it's just one of those things with the Astros that if it's not one guy, it's the next, and they're always going to keep that train moving. And then you have guys like Reddick, and then we'll get to Yuli Gurriel, and obviously Marwin, we talked about, are going to benefit from it.
Yeah, I like the fact that you're able to put someone like Reddick in the middle of the lineup. He's consistent when he's healthy. He's not too flashy, but you know what you're getting. And the consistency in a deep league is sometimes nice, especially at the draft spot that he's going to be available, because there's going to be a lot of people who are like, you know what, I want the upside play here, or you know, they may let him fall by the wayside because he doesn't bring any one stat to the table that's fantastic. But, you know, in an OBP league, he's even more valuable because of the walks he takes. But someone who can hit .314 with, you know, 13 steals and or 13 home runs and 7 steals is still nice. And with this lineup, he's going to easily be able to put up 75-plus RBIs and runs, especially if he's able to stay healthy. I mean, he basically hit those mile markers last year at 477 at-bats. I could expect an extra 50 maybe from him.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he's definitely somebody that's going to be on my radar, especially because the price is so cheap.
What are your thoughts on someone like a Jake Marisnik or a Derek Fisher? Is there any fantasy value for either of them this year?
Fisher we covered a little bit before. Fisher, I think, has some just based on getting regular playing time, and he has a little bit of a power-speed combo. Marisnik, his best attribute is his defense. You're going to see him a lot come in late in the games, defensive purposes. He's another guy that runs a little bit. He also showed some pop last year, but you're not going to get much on the batting average. If there's an injury and he gets regular playing time, I think he's worth a look on a temporary basis, but beyond that, there's not much value.
Yeah, for Derek Fisher, I think that there's going to be value if like there's an injury or something, but the only league that I'm really looking to hold him in is the Dynasty League. I don't even think in the Keeper League, unless I have a significant amount of keepers. I'm really looking to roster him. He's not the outfielder that I would want in that minor league system anyway, since that's Kyle Tucker.
Exactly. There's a lot more upside there.
Exactly. As for Marisnik, I don't think that Marisnik's really going to be able to do anything, but as a fifth outfielder for this team, basically, there's significantly worse fifth outfielders on other teams. There's even significantly worse fourth outfielders on other teams. So for someone who can put up almost double-digit steals and home runs and could be a lottery pick for you at the very back end of a draft in case there's an injury, you could do worse. The other thing is you know that he's probably going to be hurt at some point, so you could almost DL him easily.
Exactly. It's really the playing time and then the batting average, too.
Yeah. Let's move on to the infield. And at third base, we have Alex Bregman, who had a pretty good year last year, had 17 steals, 19 home runs, chipped in a bunch of runs, and a .284 average. Do you expect him to improve on those numbers this year, or are you content if he's able to put up similar stats like this next year when at the spot where you're drafting him?
All right, I think, obviously, even last year and this year, there's a ton of fantasy hype on Bregman. I think this year we get a bonus because he's also eligible at shortstop. Again, I know how much we talked about Springer not running. Bregman is the other guy that he ran a bit last year. He had 17 stolen bases. Give the Astros credit. They stuck with Bregman after he started off bad last year, struggled a bit first half of the year. If you look at his stats overall, he hit .284 with 19 homers and drove in 71 runs. So overall, it's hard to argue, but based on the struggles he had in the first half of the season, I would think maybe we'll see a few more homers, a few more RBIs next year. That not by any stretch to say that he's a buy low from a fantasy aspect because of all the hype, but I think you have the hype coupled with he's going to do a little better next year. I think the price is right on him. And you can't sleep on him when you're looking at Springer, Altuve, Correa.
Yeah, I'm pretty content with Bregman's draft position compared to the stats I think he'll be able to bring. I think he could eclipse 20 home runs with relative ease. He had such a terrible start to the year in terms of lack of power last year. I felt like he basically didn't get on track until he played against Masahiro Tanaka. And I think he hit like 3 home runs in one game or something. And I was like really disappointed with Bregman up until that point. Then he had that one game. I was like, you know what? This could be a big turnaround for a season. You know, seeing that ball go out of the park is great. And, you know, it did wonders for him. He finished the year pretty strong. And a guy like this could get to 20 steals because of the type of situation that he's in and, you know, another year under his belt and being able to work with someone like Altuve. You just hope that he doesn't regress like Correa did from year one to year two, basically. So,
yeah, I'm not necessarily sure that he's going to. I think Correa was younger. Correa also got hurt in AAA and missed a chunk of his last main season in the minor leagues. Bregman played in college. So I think that has a little something to do with it as well. Overall, as we move over to shortstop, I think Correa is the better player than Bregman, but I think Bregman's going to be more of a solid, dependable option, and he has more experience, even though they're both 23.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping, that he's able to get to that 20 mark, and at least with him, I'm pretty sure there's a pretty safe floor of at least 13 to 14 stolen bases, and to have that consistency is really nice, especially from such a young player. Speaking of Correa, what are your thoughts on him? Is he someone who's going to be able to return to that potential MVP status that people thought he could be? What are your thoughts on Correa?
Yeah, I think we're going to see Correa take a big step this year, because, I mean, last year he hurt his thumb, missed a chunk of the season, came back probably a little earlier than he should have, but the Astros wanted to make sure he got enough at-bats in September before the playoffs. He ended with 481 plate appearances, still hit 24 home runs, even though he missed a chunk. And then again, he really didn't have much power in September. The regular season, he hit 315, so we know the batting average is going to be there. He hits the ball hard. If you look at Correa, he looks like one of those guys that's going to be a star. So, yeah, I think you have to feel good about Correa moving forward, and I think 30 home runs, 100 RBIs is pretty reasonable, and maybe even a little conservative for him.
Yeah, it's a little bit conservative because I think that he could be the type of shortstop, and we don't see a lot of these that hits 30 home runs, could hit 100 RBIs and get 100 runs and still hit 300-plus. It would be nice if he was able to chip those steals back up to double digits, but, you know, I'm not really going to complain.
I'm not banking on that or complaining either.
I'm not sure if I'm going to take him because of where his draft value is, and I love Correa, I really do, but there's certain players that I feel are always more valued than where I have them, and even if I'm high on a certain player, it makes it a little tough for me to be able to go and reach for one of those potential superstars like a Correa, because if that shortstop tier starts going right around where I am, I feel I'll be able to get a better value somewhere else because the other owners may go for that run on those top four or five shortstops where I'm not necessarily willing to pay that, you know, second or third round value.
No, I see that. But, I mean, again, he is your total package in terms of homers, RBIs, runs scored, and the batting average, too. That, I mean, there's not as many 300 hitters as there once were, and you're not sacrificing the power either. So, and, again, he's 23 years old, and we haven't seen his best.
Exactly. I mean, when he came up years ago, and it's tough to believe that it's actually been a few years, he had a phenomenal year, and he's basically done great since, and there's nothing to make you think that that he can't even achieve more. So,
exactly.
What are your thoughts on Jose Altuve, who's up there for one of the best players in all of the league and is even going to be the first overall pick in certain drafts?
I actually saw it in one of my drafts in an NFBC Draft Champions. Altuve went first. I had the second pick, so I was all set to draft Altuve, and then all of a sudden I had to do a quick pivot to Mike Trout again. I'm not necessarily complaining about taking Mike Trout, but I mean that's where we've gotten with Altuve, and it's just watching him day in and day out. It just boggles your mind of how consistently productive and seemingly out of nowhere this guy has come from, and there's nothing to think he's not going to keep it up. I mean, maybe he's not going to hit 24 home runs again. Maybe he's going to hit in the 18 to 20 range. But batting average is there. Stolen bases are there. I mean, again, he's 27, so he's just entering that prime bucket as far as age goes. The home run per fly ball rate did rise last year. So with this skill set, everything we're seeing is believable. So there's no reason not to think this is going to continue, and he's a safe top one or two pick.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't have him outside of my top two because I mean, how many other hitters are going to hit 333 or better for the entire season? You got maybe one or two players in the entire league outside of Altuve, and one of those players is Trout. The other one that has the potential is probably Bryce Harper when he's playing really well. I don't know if there's anyone else that has the capability of being able to consistently hit 333 for the entire year. Do you know of any other players?
No, and he does it so effortlessly, too.
That's the thing. It's so effortlessly. When he goes and gets a steal, it's effortless. He knows when to run. He doesn't really get caught that much. Still hits 24 home runs. He's added to the power over the last few years. I mean, he's going to score 100-plus runs. The fact that he's getting all those RBIs is still great. Yeah, it would be nice to see him get back to the 96 that he had 2 years ago. But at the same point in time, are you really going to complain that he only had 81? No.
No, exactly, not at all. I mean, yeah, it's possible that if Bregman is a little more consistent, then maybe it is possible. You never know. But, I mean, again, there's nothing here to complain about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When a player like Jose Altuve comes along and you're, you know, going to try to complain about something, yeah, obviously you're going to complain about the fact that he's not getting a ton of RBIs, but I don't really know how you do that because there's still the entire other things that he brings to the package, which you're not getting from A, second baseman in general, and B, you're not getting that from fantasy players. I mean,
exactly.
The fact that you're able to gain as much value as you do from a player like that is absolutely fantastic. I mean, his worst category last year in terms of the player rater was actually his home runs, and that's because he only hit 24. But at the same point in time, the values that he gives you in average and stolen bases alone should put you ahead of a lot of people in A, roto leagues, and B, in a head-to-head league.
Oh, sure, and the 24 homers aren't a liability.
They're nothing to tie your face up to.
It's kind of average of where you want to come out per position, so.
Exactly. And how many second basemen are really hitting 24 home runs with consistency year in and year out at this point?
Exactly, that you can count on, too.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about the first baseman? That's Yuli Gurriel, who last year had a pretty productive season considering that he's probably a corner infielder on most fantasy teams, but he still hit basically 300. He hit 299, 75 RBIs, 18 home runs. Those are basically the things that jump out at you the most. Nothing too flashy, but a consistent producer in this lineup. What are your thoughts on him?
Exactly. I mean, he hit 299 last year, so we know the guy can hit for average. He had 42 doubles. He's a little older. He had 18 homers last year. I'm not sure he's going to really do much more than that. But with the 42 doubles, he does have a little bit of pop. He can get the ball into the gaps. Can be a run producer. If he continues to bat fifth, that's also going to be a huge help. So he's not going to be your starting first baseman because you have to make up the homers elsewhere. But the fact that he's going to hit for a good average, he's going to drive in some runs. He's a solid corner infield option.
Yeah, I like Yuli as a corner bat because when you're getting down into draft pits of, you know, the corner infielders, there's not going to be a ton of people who will still hit you 15 plus home runs while hitting 300. And the ones that are probably not producing much else, because, you know, they may only chip in like 50 or so RBIs, 50 runs. But this is a guy who's hitting in the middle of one of the best lineups in baseball. So I could easily see him doing better. I mean, last year, if I recall correctly, he was batting at the bottom of the lineup for a bit. They moved him around. They finally settled him into the 5-6 area. And, you know, he seemed to kind of come alive. And I think the health of the other players being around him and everything and having the first baseman job to himself basically will just open things up for him to have a good year. Why don't we look at the catcher situation where you have both Brian McCann and Evan Gattis? I know that you're a bigger Gattis fan than McCann, as evidenced by you having him as a top five catcher, not to give away your ranks, but what are your thoughts on both of these guys and what can we expect stat-wise?
Well, I think the thing about Gattis is we'll talk about him first. He's going to he only had 325 plate appearances last year, but he's going into this year as the everyday designated hitter. Whether that stands or not, it's a different story. Whether or not they signed Carlos Gonzalez or they had another veteran bat, kind of like they did with Beltran last year. But I think Gattis is going to get the majority of the at-bats at the DH spot, and he's also the primary backup catcher to McCann. And the thing with Gattis, last year he had a shoulder injury, kind of zapped the majority of his power. That's why he only hit 12 homers. But in turn, he increased his contact percentage from 73 to 83%. So while the power suffered, contact went up. The shoulder's healthy this year, and he can keep that contact. I'm thinking we definitely have 25 homers, which he's proven in the past he can do. Drove him 55 runs last year. Again, plenty of opportunity, RBI opportunities in that lineup. So that's why I'm kind of bullish on Gattis for this year. But again, catch position really isn't that good. And the fact that he's going to get the majority of his at-bats at DH also help. And now McCann, I think you can do a lot worse than McCann. The batting average of 241, we're never going to see him really hit 270 or 280 or even to be the point, not even where he's an asset, but just kind of not hurting you in batting average. The fact that he's a catcher and doesn't play every day, he's going to play maybe 4 or 5 games a week instead of 5 or 6, I think that helps that you're not going to take as much of a hit to your batting average. But the RBIs are going to be there. The home runs are going to be there. He's still a borderline top 12 catcher for me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that both of these guys are still going to be in the lineup at least 100-plus times, 100 to 120 times without any injuries, I think. You could even see upwards of 135 games if there's no injuries to them. More so Gattis than anything because of the DH role, but it's nice because these guys both have, they both have nice power. Yeah, the averages aren't great, but in relation to catcher, like you were saying, the catcher position can go south pretty quick. So, you can still get value from either of these guys later on in the draft, which is nice. I'm just not sure exactly if I'm as high on, either of them as you are, because right now I have McCann as my 12th ranked catcher, and I have Evan Gattis as my 9th. So I still view Gattis as a top 10 player. I just think that, the reason for this is because I'm banking on a rebound for players like a Wilson Ramos or a Jonathan Lucroy or, someone like Yadier Molina being able to do it again. Otherwise, if I had, really played him somewhere, I could have put him as high as 6th. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was a top 6 option at the end of the year. I just think that the other players are more likely to rebound than to have as bad of seasons as what they had last year.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they do, and not to go too much into the catcher position straight from the Astros, Gattis is a proven 25 home run guy, which those other guys aren't. So to me, that kind of, if he's a proven 25 with maybe he can get to 30, depending on how everything falls, to me, that's why I have him at 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you are looking for one solid stat from the catcher position and it's home runs, Gattis is someone who could easily be a top 5 catcher because of the amount of home runs that he's able to do without dinging your average too bad. And he's still going to be able to give you RBIs as a result. So I really like Evan Gattis. I just want to, expect the type of rebound for a Wilson Ramos or Jonathan Lucroy, who could both be potential top 5 players overall with the stat lines that they're able to produce if they actually rebound to prior forms.
That it is possible.
Is there any other hitters that we missed?
No, I think we kind of got through everybody that is going to be on your fantasy radar, barring any injuries or any last-minute roster additions, since essentially most of the free agents are still free agents out there anyway.
Let's move into the rotation then, where you have Dallas Keuchel, Justin Verlander, and Gerrit Cole leading the way for fantasy teams. all of these players could be considered number one / number twos for your team, depending on how deep of a league. Which of these guys do you think brings you the best value this year?
I think it's Keuchel. Because Keuchel, remember, he was hurt last year. He had the neck injury. He was, that beginning of the year, they monitored his innings. He really didn't pitch deep into games. I mean, obviously, let's be honest, they knew that they were going to win the division, or at least come close to winning the division and make the playoffs pretty quickly into the season. So they did a good job of managing his workload. They were careful about the neck injury. He spent some time on the DL. He only threw 145 innings last year. Granted, that's regular season. He did obviously pitch in the playoffs as well. But he battled, we later found out, he battled the foot injury for the second half of the year. And he still had a 290 ERA and a 112 whip. Strikeouts were, I guess, you know, comparatively speaking to a Verlander and a Cole, they're down. He only struck out 125 in 145 innings. But guy keeps the ball on the ground. 67% ground ball rate last year. You know he's getting the run support. I mean, they're all getting the run support. They're all benefiting from the offense. They're all benefiting from the bullpen. That's not the question. But Keuchel's, he's 30, so he's 4 years younger than Verlander. I think maybe the 21% home run to fly ball rate comes down a little bit this year. That with the ground balls, plus he's healthy. He didn't throw as many innings as the other two last year. So to me, he's the best value. And then I have Verlander 2 in that situation, Cole 3. Then, but the thing to watch with Verlander is we saw once he came over at the August 31st deadline, his September and into the postseason, he did a lot as far as improving his pitch mix, changing the order of the pitches. And I think that's something that Cole's going to benefit from as well.
For me, I think that Keuchel could represent the best value. If I was going to pick someone else, just because I agree with all the same points that you're making, and I think that Keuchel is their best pitcher, I think that Cole probably represents the second best value just because
I agree.
He's coming over in the trade and people are like, oh, you know, he's going from the NL to the AL, so that could ding his value as a result of that. But Gerrit Cole is the type of pitcher who's going to get you a ton of innings. He's still going to get you a lot of strikeouts. And, yeah, he had a bad year last year, but he gave up a ton of home runs as a result, which he, I believe, gave up more home runs to lefties last year than he had in the rest of his career combined, if I recall. And he just had a bad year with the fly ball, with it going out. And he had a bunch of bad stretches, but he's the type of pitcher that could easily rebound. You've seen what this pitching staff has been able to do, and I believe that the pitching coach will be able to at least help be able to work on any potential issues that he has. The team around him is going to be better, so the run support is going to be better. Even Todd Zola, I saw a tweet by him stating that Gerrit Cole's value probably should increase, even if it is a little bit. It still should increase rather than decrease coming over into trade. So I believe that Gerrit Cole is still going to be able to give you pretty good value.
Yeah, the thing you touched on was obviously the home runs was a big problem for Cole last year. 16% home runs fly ball rate. I'm going to guess that's going to go down a little bit this year. And the other thing to really keep an eye on is obviously we know about Pittsburgh and Ray Sears, the pitching coach. He's worked wonders with a lot of guys. But it's still the philosophy of leading with your fastball and then coming back and then coming up behind that with your breaking pitches. The Astros have the opposite philosophy that you're going to go with your best pitches first. I mean, we've seen it consistently. We'll get to it in a little bit with Peacock and all the sliders he threw, McCullers with his curveball, Verlander benefited from that when he came over in September. So I think as an organizational philosophy, if Cole changes his approach, we know the guy has stuff, we know he throws hard, I think that's going to be a big difference for him this year, more than anything else. And then Verlander, I mean, we kind of just have to watch out for the fact that he's 34. I mean, again, he's still an ace. He was bringing it through the World Series last year. He's going to get you strikeouts. He's going to get you the wins. He probably still finished with better ratios than Cole, but he's definitely more of a number two than a number one for me, fantasy-wise.
Plus, he's married to Kate Upton now, so that's a
yeah. Plus. So I mean, that makes him number one. Yeah,
exactly. The thing about Gerrit Cole coming over is, if you look at the team, this team actually has most of its pitchers that get more strikeouts than innings pitched, and I believe that's just because of exactly what you're saying. You lead with your best pitch. This team has really developed the pitching. You saw players like Morton have great years. Davinsky's had a great year. You know, even some of the younger players that have come up, you know, Lance McCullers has had good years. He still gets a lot of strikeouts. Martez has got a bunch of strikeouts. McHugh even. Yeah, not everyone's going to have, you know, great ratios all the time, and that does happen. But I expect Cole to be able to bring it back down to like a 3.6 ERA, maybe a 3.5 ERA, and a 1.15 whip as opposed to a 1.25 whip. I could see him getting up to like around the 14 wins again, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had 200-plus strikeouts compared to the 200 innings that I expect him to be able to throw. So, and with Verlander, I love Verlander. I just, because of his age, you know, I would prefer to not draft him necessarily, depending on where he's going in my specific drafts. Of my rankings, I have Verlander ranked the highest, followed by Cole, followed by Keuchel. So if that's the case, that's why I would expect Keuchel to have the best value, because I expect him to still, quote-unquote, be the best value, because he can easily return you top 10 value of all these players.
Yeah, I still think if I'm doing my rankings, I got to have Verlander above Cole. I mean, there was about a run difference in their ERA. I mean, granted, according to Baseball HQ, Verlander's expected ERA was in the low fours last year, so. But again, part of that was in Detroit and the change in philosophy. So it's probably closer than you think.
Yeah,
between all of them, and of the three, Verlander's probably the one that I'm least likely to own.
I agree. Ray, what are your thoughts on Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton to finish out this rotation? Are you excited about the potential they're able to bring, or are you kind of staying away?
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited about both of them. I mean, the thing with Morton is last year he was healthy. I mean, he did go on the DL with a lat injury, but for the most part, after making like four starts the year before, he was healthy, got through 146 innings. There's nothing to suggest he's not going to come back with at least 150 to 175 innings this year. He velocity was up and sitting in the high 90s. Again, he looked probably the best he's looked his entire career. I think part of it was health, and I think part of it was just the approach with the Astros and their staff and the analytics and the fact that he was using his best pitches, throwing hard, keeping the ball down, getting ahead in the count. And I think that's going to continue. And, I mean, you want to project it out to say, all right, he did that at 150. What can he do at 200? What kind of strikeouts can you get? How many wins can you get? I'm not expecting that. I'm expecting him to be maybe a 4 or 5 in my rotation. And kind of more the same, next year. There's not much upside, but I'm not sure there's much risk or downside either. And McCullers, we have to be careful not to overrate McCullers. We have to look at McCullers as what he is, and that's a 24-year-old pitcher with a ton of talent that's yet to prove for a full season that he can stay healthy, stay in the rotation, pitch deep into games, get through the lineup for that third time, and make it through the season. I think of all the pitchers, the Astros are going to be the most careful with him because they have the resources in the bullpen to do it. McCullers is, for all intents and purposes, their fifth starter, so there's zero pressure on him. We know the curveball's legit. We know he throws hard. We know he can strike people out. He did have a 4.25 ERA last year, but the FIP was 3.10, so that's more than a run difference. That's a lot of cause for optimism there. He walked 40, only a 55% first pitch strike rate. So those are probably the last two pieces, aside from the help that needs to come into play for McCullers. And I mean, really, I think the issue is going to be the wins are going to be down if he's not pitching as deep into games, and it depends what they cap his innings at. But you can make an argument he has some of the most explosive stuff in the rotation. I wouldn't go as far to say that he has the most explosive stuff in the rotation, but it's up there, and when you're sitting down to draft this year, you don't want to get blinded to the potential, blinded to the stuff, and not take a closer look at the results and the risk factors.
I'm a huge McCullers fan. I've loved him for years. I loved his strikeout rate. I want to see him make some improvements this year, and like you said, he won't have a ton of pressure being the fifth starter. If he could cut down on those walks, that'd be great. If he could cut down on the ERA by, you know, a half a run, I'd be happy. You know, having something in the mid-threes to 3.75, that would be great. You know, can't really ask for more than that. It would be fantastic if he could get 150 innings. Do we expect him to get to that amount this year?
Yeah, I think 150. I'm just not sure we're going to see much more than 150.
Yeah. As for Charlie Morton, you know, it would be great if we could see him get, you know, 175 with almost 190 Ks, 180 Ks. That'd be great. You know, even if he got closer to 200, that would be fantastic. He had a really good year last year, considering that people thought he was kind of left for dead. And, you know, he came back, had some more zip on his fastball, and he just had a really good year, especially with the pitching coach. So, what are your thoughts on someone like a Brad Peacock or a Colin McHugh who could be used in the rotation as well? Obviously, there's a ton more upside for Peacock, but are you drafting these guys with the expectation that they could be brought back into the rotation, or are you avoiding them unless it's a pretty deep league?
McHugh I'm pretty much avoiding because I think he's really going to be long man spot starter. I mean, even when he's in the rotation, he's a solid guy. I mean, he did strike out 62 batters in 63 and a third last year. So there's some potential there. We've seen some results, but he's better than the pitchers that are in the rotation of a lot of other teams. So let's put it that way. But unfortunately with the Astros, he's really just going to be a long man in the spot starter. And then it eliminates his fantasy value unless somebody gets hurt or they decide to shut somebody down for a start or two. Peacock, I think, is going to have more value because I could see them bringing Peacock in maybe in the fifth, sixth inning in a few games, let him go two or three innings, especially maybe keep an eye on him in the games McCullers starts. If they're going to get McCullers through the lineup twice, see how he's going, depending on the pitch count, bring Peacock in and let Peacock go for a bit. I mean, the strikeouts were off the charts last year, 161 in 132 innings. It'll be good for Chris Davinsky, who made the All-Star team last year, that now you kind of have two pitchers in that same multi-inning role. So I think that's gonna help. And, I mean, he's somebody to keep an eye on. He's somebody in deeper leagues if you want to get your strikeouts, maybe manage the ratios a little bit. Get some holds in there if it's a holds league, but unfortunately there's not too much fantasy value.
Yeah, obviously I'd like to see Peacock be in a rotation, but the only way that happens is if they go to a six-man rotation or someone gets hurt, neither of which I want to see. So Peacock is obviously the person I'm higher on. If I was going to grab someone for like a holds league, I'm still grabbing him with the expectation that he could be like a Davinsky-type player and move into a rotation. And he's got a ton of K upside. As for McHugh, I really don't want any part of him, even in a deep league, like a super deep league. I guess I could consider taking him as a last starter or something, but I don't expect a lot from him.
No, not at all.
Are you high on Ken Giles this year, or did the playoffs kind of turn you off of him?
I mean, the playoffs were obviously – there was some look away and close-the-eyes kind of moments with Giles. But regular season, the guy was – dynamite, 230 ERA and a 1.04 whip. So he picked up 34 saves. He struck out 83 guys in 62 and two-thirds. It was really his first true season as a true closer, called upon in those pressure situations. Obviously, the playoffs is the playoffs, the World Series is the World Series. It's a different animal. From a fantasy perspective, we're obviously just concerned about the regular season. I think Giles has the job again going into 2018. I think it's going to take a bit for them to pull him from it, at least in April, because they're going to want to give him some rope because they have that luxury. I mean, in between, if you're going to leave Davinsky in that setup role, you still have Will Harris, Joe Smith, Hector Rendon. So you have three other guys that can come in and kind of vulture saves, and it's going to depend probably on the hot hand, but I wouldn't surprise me to see Rendon be next in line for actual saves because he has the most ninth inning experience. But back to Giles, 17% first pitch strike rate, 62% swing strike rate. For me, it's going to be more how he responds mentally, how he looks in the spring from a mental aspect. But I think the Astros are committed to him as their closer.
Yeah, they've shown a lot of adversity with him as the closer. You know, the first year they had Gregerson and Harris and Giles, and, you know, it was a mismatch. And then last year with the playoffs and everything. So there's a lot of toll on him mentally, but I think he's going to be able to rebound. And if he has a solid year again, I would be not one bit surprised, especially because he's the type of guy who can put up like a Kimbrel-type season. You know, he could get close to 100 strikeouts if he really put his mind to it. So,
and again, he's still 27, so it's not like the book is fully closed on Giles either.
Exactly. Chris Davinsky, I love him in save holds leagues, and I think that he's got great stuff. And he's one of those type of relievers that's still going to get you like possibly 100 strikeouts. He can still get you a bunch of wins, the occasional save, and he'll have great ratios. Is this someone that is off your draft boards and as one of the first non-closer relievers?
Yeah, I have him. Yeah, I have him higher than Peacock, just because I'm thinking he's going to be used in higher leverage situations. Whereas Peacock does have more of a chance to start, but they're going to use Davinsky in higher leverage situations. I think they're going to work to manage Davinsky's workload a little more. And maybe turn – I'm not sure that they're going to turn him into a traditional eighth inning, two- or three-run lead, save situation. He's going to come out with nobody on base in the eighth inning. I think he's going to be the ace in the hole that if they start the eighth with a Harris or a Smith and a guy or two gets on base and gets into trouble, Davinsky's going to come in. I mean, again, with that being said, Davinsky could also become the closer. I mean, he's probably the second most talented pitcher as far as stuff goes in this bullpen behind Giles. Results-wise, as a true middle reliever, setup reliever, Harris, Smith are ahead of him, but that's more experience-based than anything else. Davinsky definitely tired out in the second half of last year. We saw his ERA jump up to 334 and his first pitch strike rate drop by 10% and 53% fly ball rate. So, I mean, there's some things that say, hey, maybe we should pump the brakes a little bit in the second half. But overall, it's still a pretty nice picture to paint.
Yeah, I agree. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am over on Twitter at Ray_Hune_28. You could find me podcasting about baseball on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, as well as writing about baseball, and doing the same over at Roto Professor, getting you ready for the regular season with some sleepers, some value picks, some guys we should maybe take a closer look at. Not necessarily under the radar guys, but maybe guys that are being undervalued a little bit, just some general strategy. We're getting into the home stretch now. We got less than a month to spring training, so maybe all these free agents will get signed, and we'll have a good regular season here. What about Ben? You, Ben, where can we find you?
I can be reached on Twitter at BBrandSFWFB. You'll be able to find me on the Kuhn and Friends podcast during the baseball regular season, along with Ray himself and Evan Peterson. You'll be able to find me twice a week on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast, joined by Eric Mackey. From the rest of us at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball off-season, everyone.